Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Kissimmee Utility Authority meeting for February 3rd, 2021, and please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We go on to item C, approval of the agenda. Can I have a motion to approve today's agenda?
Second.
All in favor, signify by A.
Aye.
Those opposed? None. Motion approved. Awards and presentations. I call on to Brian to please handle this one.
Yes, Madam Chair. The first item under awards and presentation this afternoon is KUA was recently the recipient of the Restoring Communities Award by the Florida Municipal Electric Association, and we've got Tiffany Henderson here going to present the award.
Good afternoon. So the Florida Municipal Electric Association announced its annual Restoring Communities Awards, recognizing public power utilities that have provided or received mutual aid following significant weather events or other emergency situations to fellow public power partners both in and out of the state. KUA was one of 13 Florida public power utilities honored for efforts to restore public power quickly and safely when called upon. The following KUA employees provided mutual aid to public power utilities in 2020. Hurricane Delta, October 8th through the 14th. The following employees assisted Lafayette Utility System: Jamie Boswell, Eddie Gluck, Billy White, Alan Carver, Austin Franny, Robert Diaz, Chris Kidding, Lars Ackerman, Chad Ackery, Nick Aviles, Gary Lamb, and Robert Rivera. And during severe weather on Christmas Day and the day after Christmas, the following employees assisted Gainesville Regional Utilities: George Blair, Barney Thompson, Bill Sutphin, Mike Taylor, Brendan LaFlame, Matt Glad, Sam Galt, and Lars Ackerman. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations. Absolutely. Very beautiful. Pass it on.
Okay. And Madam Chair, we've got several service awards this afternoon, if you'd like to join me up here.
Gladly.
Our first service award this afternoon is for 5 years of service to Ms. Sue Ann Panton, who is a GIS analyst in our operations department. Congratulations, Sue Ann. Next, Ms. Lakeisha Fluellen, who is our risk management administrator in our human resources department, celebrating 5 years of service. Congratulations. He's one of our lead linemen in our operations department. We're recognizing him for 10 years of service. Danny Gonzalez isn't able to be here, but I want to recognize Danny for 15 years of service to KUA. Danny is an apprentice field service specialist within our customer service department. Congratulations, Danny. Next, we've got Jared Tillman, who also was not able to be here, but we're going to recognize Jared for 15 years of service. He's a power plant shift supervisor in our operations department. Congratulations, Jared. Michael Regan. Come on up here. Yeah. Michael Regan is a power plant shift supervisor of operation and maintenance in our operations department. We're recognizing Mike for 25 years of service to KUA. Next, where is Steve? There he is. Come on up here, Steve. Steve is an engineering technician, too, in our operations department. He's being recognized as our February 2021 Employee of the Month. Steve, two of your employees with a combined 33 years at KUA, 24 of which have been spent working alongside you, submitted the following comments. Steve is an incredibly hard worker who is not only dedicated and totally loyal to KUA, but also grateful for the opportunity to be a part of the KUA family. He always does his best to perform any task given to him in the correct way, as he is very by the book kind of a guy, always striving to do things the right way. Steve recently earned his CPM certification, congratulations, has served on many terms with the EOC to help show the employees how much they are appreciated, and volunteered for countless community events. Steve is generous, genuine, sympathetic, caring, honest, and a good friend. When anyone needs anything, he's always willing to help. KUA is very fortunate to have Steve as part of their team. I couldn't agree more, Steve. Congratulations. And I want to introduce our chair.
She's got something for you. For you.
I'd like to go meet the mayor here. Mayor Kissimmee, Olga Gonzalez.
Thank you.
Our vice chair, Manny Ortega.
Thank you.
Somebody's been on that. Some day off.
Director Jeannie Van Meter.
Good to see you. Reserved parking place. And it's a size large shirt. You may have to get shirted in for next month. Yeah. Kind of a big guy.
Chair Ethel.
Hey, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Oops.
Mr. Ray Hamill.
Thank you.
And this is a day off with pay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're going to next item, item E, here the audience. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board? Nope. So we go on to next consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Nobody. Motion approved. Public hearing? None. We move on to next item. Informational presentations.
Yes. Madam Chair, we've got two informational presentations this afternoon. The first, McCormick Research Institute is the recipient of KUA sponsorship funding. Today we've got one of their couple of their representatives, as I understand, are here to tell us more about the organization and how the KUA sponsorship has supported their efforts within our community. Here to tell us a little bit more about that is Director of Corporate Communications, Tiffany Henderson.
Good afternoon. We have with us today Tomasa Sanchez, CEO and founder of McCormick Research Institute, formerly known as Heavenly Hooves. She's joined today by Lindsay Gallimore, a veteran of the U.S. Navy. Lindsay, thank you for your service. McCormick Research Institute's vision is to reduce veteran suicidal rates and strengthen families who include an individual with special needs by expanding access to effective equine-assisted therapies worldwide. McCormick Research Institute has received $5,000 in sponsorship funds from KUA in this current budget year, and this is consistent with levels in previous years. And founder Tomasa Sanchez is here now to present.
Good
Thank you, Tiffany, Madam Chairman, board members, guests. It's an honor to be here. Charles Sharp arrived at a farm to read a meter, one of your KUA employees. And he stepped out of his truck to move towards the meter and saw a gentleman, a handsome gentleman, who had been moving in his direction. And then that gentleman pivoted and began to walk away. But in two short steps, that broken man, my hero, put a bullet through his own chest and committed suicide right in front of Charles Sharp. Charles was on my family's property that day when he was traumatized. And my hero was the one that took his own life. And on that day, there was only one place where I could go as a young woman and fully find solace in my sorrow, and that was in the stall of my horse. When I went into the stall, she wrapped her neck around me and literally held me straight for 12 hours while I laid there in the corner, deep in anguish. But our world has a wonderful way of taking tragedy and turning it into triumph. And we began together kind of in a way with KUA on that day, and we have been triumphing for now almost 20 years. Because when I came out of that stall, I had experienced something that told me that horses have a power to heal that has yet to be fully tapped. And so it was then that I founded Heavenly Hooves in 2002. And you can see on the screen, we started with Heavenly Hooves, which is still the name of one of our programs, and we serve special needs children, and we started with serving terminally ill children at Give Kids the World. We also have our Horses and Heroes program, where we serve veterans with PTSD. And in a sweet irony, we are part of suicide prevention now. I'll tell you a little bit more later about the Institute, the educational program that we have, and the research. So I know it's a little unorthodox, but can a muzzle that is velvet, can the rocking rhythm of a horse, can the nurturing spirit of the equine really be a prescription that's more powerful than a pill? Well, UCF School of Medicine would say, yes, it is. We work with them today, as well as with 20 horses, 4.5 staff, which I know thanks to the PPP loan application I just finished, 150 participants weekly, typically when we have a healthy time, when we're not in a pandemic, and we operate on about $500,000 budget. Together with KUA, we make a really meaningful difference in our community. Some people like Lindsay, who is a guest here with me today, who is one of our veterans, live in the KUA region, but some of them don't. But this is a region that has been protected by veterans all around the world. You see, you and I, we're on a mission not to just serve our community, which we do really well. I'm not trying to be arrogant. I just work really hard to make sure it happens with some wonderful board members. But we're on a mission for our community to make a difference in our country. Bob McDonald, who is one of our board members, who happens to also be the last secretary of the VA. Well, I guess it's two back now that we just have a new one. He came on our board and he said, this program needs to be available to every wounded veteran in the United States. And we are on a mission to do just that. We're able to do that because of partners in our community like you. You have been very loyal. You have been very kind. And we hope that we are serving you proud and that you are proud of the work that you do with us. With nonprofit programs, sometimes it's easy to get money, or give money, I should say, and then hope that it's done well and trust your community that it has. And so I assure you that we have. We are on a task that is not easy, so it requires wise stewardship. We are, I assure you, the most financially disciplined nonprofit in our region. I am a volunteer CEO for nearly 20 years. We have 19 board members, and of them, all of them financially contribute, some north of $100,000. And we operate very strategically. You can see on the grants that we were well in the black this year, this past year, which is a big part and due to the PPP money, but also at the same time, we wisely managed our money in case it didn't come through. And it's a good thing because in 2022, we'll be launching some new initiatives that will take what we have done with research and make it a nationwide impact to fulfill our vision. On this next slide, you can see a few select members of our board. Yes, I admit my dad and my husband are on there, but I know, you know, when to recruit good men. But there are 17 other board members on there that steward our organization, as well as 9 researchers that we have working on our initiatives. And so rather than showcasing them for too long, what I would like to do and what they would like me to do is to invite Lindsay up, a veteran who served in the Navy, so she can share with you and give you a peek into the impact that your contributions have helped. As a point of reference, it cost us about $3,000 to save a life. It takes us about 12 weeks to rehab a veteran who is highly suicidal. And at the end of our program, we have never had a veteran commit suicide. I'd say that's a pretty good bang for your buck. So with that, I would like to invite Lindsay up.
Hi. My name is Lindsay Gallimore. Thank you for having us here today. And thank you so much for your contributions. I apologize for getting upset. Your contribution saved my life. And I know it saved the contributions your board has made to McCormick has saved my life personally. When I first came back from the Navy in 2016, I was on a lot of medications. I was suicidal. I had been in and out of inpatient hospitals at least 3 or 4 times. I wasn't allowed to own any weapons or guns or anything. I didn't want to have a future. And then in the beginning of 2017, my mom reached out to Miss Tomasa and her team, and together they coaxed me into joining the program. They changed my life. I was just a shell of a person. I didn't think I was any better than dirt or trash you would see on the side of the road. And then when I decided to start really getting involved with the program, I learned how to be around horses, and I learned that the only change that was going to happen in my life was the change that I made. And I had to be strong. And the horses showed me that I had the power within inside me. They showed me that while it is a risk to open up to other people emotionally, it's 10 times more rewarding when you find those good friendships and those good people to surround yourself with. In 2016, I never thought I would be here. Just thank you so much. There's so many people this program has saved. We learned to be human again, to have emotion again, that it's okay to make mistakes, that you don't have to bend to everyone else's whim all the time. And now thinking back on where I was in 2016, I'm hoping at this point in my life to be a successful business owner myself before 30. And that never would have happened without this program. And Ms. Tomasa had it right. This is a very powerful prescription without a pill. It is. I'm no longer on any more medications. It's been almost 6 months now.
I'd say that's a good testimony. What do you all think? First, it was less than 8 minutes, so if it went over 8 minutes, I deeply apologize. But I do know it might have dropped a tear or two, but please know that there is joy in the place that we operate and that you support, and we are very grateful for your partnership in this community initiative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to next item. Financials?
Yes. Madam Chair, each year, at the end of the year, our external auditor, Purvis and Gray, does an audit of our financials at year end. And here to tell us about that is Kevin Crawford and Mark White with Purvis and Gray.
Thanks, Brian. Madam Chair, as you know, in December, we presented to you the results of the 9/30 fiscal year end date financial statements. And those were, of course, the unaudited versions. They were being audited at the time you saw them. And with the exception of a couple of the required accruals that relate to some of the more technical issues with the GASBs that come into effect, like with pensions and for our FEMA accrual, those statements remain largely unchanged. And so here to talk about the audit itself of those financial statements and the audited results that were the product of that effort and the accruals and the final numbers that go into our audited financial statements were in your packet this week that you've had a chance to review. And to give you the overview of that process so that you can kind of understand better how it works, what goes into it, the efforts that are required to produce the opinion, and the multitude of letters that are accompanying those statements that Mark and his group put together. Mark is going to come up now and has a presentation and share that with you, and be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the audit process or anything else. So without further ado, I'll introduce Mark White with Purvis and Gray. Mark?
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin, and good afternoon, board members, Ms. Mayor, Chairman, and the rest of the board. That's a tough act to follow before me. I don't think I'm going to be able to top that one, but we will do our best to keep this interesting for you. We are here essentially to complete the audit process by reviewing our final reports with you, the governing board. So that's the purpose of being here today. And this first slide shows our leadership portion of your audit team. And you see upper right there, Ms. Catherine Eno is your audit manager. Catherine is expecting her second daughter in early March and is joining us by Zoom rather than by in person. So she is with us today. I'm the partner in charge, also Ron Whiteside's technical consulting partner, and Michael Sandstrom is the gentleman lower right with all of the initials after his name. That means he is an IT auditor and spent a good bit of time with Jeff Gray, your vice president of technology. So that's kind of who we are, if you will. Briefly, I think everybody deserves some encouragement and maybe, you know, something short of applause, but certainly a pat on the back. You know, here we are on time with the audit presentation, despite the virus and all the holdups that you could imagine go along with that. Your team and our team kind of rolled up our sleeves and made sure that we were going to get this done and not be delayed. So I think everybody did a really strong effort, and we're pleased that we're able to keep this going as if it was just another year. So what did we do in an audit engagement? Most of y'all know that Florida statutes require that all local governments undergo a financial audit each year. What is a financial audit? Well, a financial audit is where an independent CPA firm such as Purvis Gray is engaged to audit your financial statements and to express an opinion whether or not those financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. That's the primary scope of what we do. And in your case, that includes your electric fund as well as your pension fund. This year, you also had a federal single audit, which is related to the FEMA grants that you received from Hurricane Irma, which we all know was 2017, so you may wonder why we're doing that in 2020, but that gets audited at the time that the project worksheets are obligated, which generally is a year or two later down the road. So in addition to the basic financial audit, we do a federal single audit on your federal expenditures of grant funds. We also look at internal controls and compliance with laws and regulations. Auditors' reports. There is no shortage, as Kevin alluded to, there is no shortage of different auditors' reports in the book here. You guys have it on your screen. Rather than go through all of those, I've tried to summarize them in certain slides here for you, okay, because there's so many different ones. So let's take a look at these. Again, I mentioned that the primary scope of what we're doing is an opinion on the financial statements. So we have issued an unmodified or a clean opinion, if you will. It says that we believe that the financial statements are fairly stated in accordance with GAAP. Our report includes an emphasis of matter, which just points the reader to the footnotes where you have described the uncertainty associated with the COVID virus. Internal control-related matters, no material weaknesses were reported. Moving on, internal control and compliance with laws and regulations, again, no material weaknesses and no instances of noncompliance that would have a material effect on your financial statements. So that's very good. Middle of the page there, compliance with Florida Statute Section 218, the state wants to know that you are managing any surplus money that you might invest, that you are managing it in accordance with that particular statute that's referenced up there. And that statute requires you to have a very strict investment policy that follows that statute. There's 13 or 14 different points of it. And because in years gone by, some other units of local government have done poor jobs of that, they now ask that the financial statement auditors take a look at your compliance with that statute. So we have a report in this document on that that says that we believe you are in compliance with the statute. And you do go beyond the safe harbors of that statute with the investment, so it is relevant. Management letter, the rules of the Auditor General interpret the Florida statute that requires the audit. So there's a variety of Auditor General reports that are also included. Nothing significant to report there. And here, moving on, we're getting to the single audit. The major federal program that we audited was the, and it's interesting, you know, when you hear the word FEMA, everybody knows what that means, but it's interesting. A lot of people don't realize that that comes through the Department of Homeland Security. That is the federal agency that administers FEMA. And that's the grant, CFDA 97.036. And we have a clean opinion on your compliance with that as well as internal controls. Moving on, there's a governance letter where we point out some of the more significant disclosures that are in the notes to the financial statements, significant estimates. You know, there's always estimates that are involved when preparing financial statements, and we've identified here what some of the significant ones are, the allowance for doubtful accounts and bad debt expense, and we added to that in this slide here. This was an area that our firm was looking at as we went into this audit season, and we're still in it, to look at all the various utility audits that we do, because we're very concerned with the virus and unemployment and that sort of thing, that accounts receivable might be building and have some significant uncollectible amounts in there. So, you know, you create an estimated reserve for uncollectible accounts for that. And we're very pleased that y'all came through that pretty darn well. I know there was a lot of effort to help your customers with some of the social service agencies that would help them with their electric bills when they were struggling. And that worked out very well. I think y'all, we really didn't have any serious concern about your allowance, so that was very good. Unbilled revenues and receivables, accumulated depreciation, these are all significant estimates. The pension and OPEB liabilities, fair value of financial instruments, regulated operations costs to be recovered in future revenues. If y'all don't mind, I'm going to take half of this off because I can hardly breathe and talk at the same time. I challenge that. Some significant things that occurred during the year, obviously the COVID-19 uncertainty, that went all the way through your operations and through the audit, as I'd mentioned. Another big thing is your community solar program became operational this year through FMPA. So that was a big thing. We spent a little bit of time taking a look at that in terms of how that gets billed to you through FMPA, through your purchase power billing, and then how that in turn is billed to your customers that are subscribing. And, of course, you have several pretty high subscribers there in the city of Kissimmee. Hats off to you guys doing 100% of community solar. That's big. That's very big. Advanced metering infrastructure program. Excuse me. AMI. The AMI program is ongoing, and approximately 80% of your customers have been converted as of the date of our auditor's report, and we think that's going to be a really big thing for the authority here. It's going to be providing you a lot of information on customer accounts, as well as eliminate a lot of meter reading costs and turn-ons and turn-offs that can be done with the flip of a switch instead of a man in a truck. Capital asset closeouts was something that we've been working with your staff as you complete construction projects. A lot of that was accumulating in construction work in progress because you're having some software troubles in terms of being able to unitize it out to the various plant accounts. And y'all been working on that for a couple of years, actually. And that was substantially completed this year. So we were very pleased to see that happen. It's kind of geography, just classification, but it was something that needed to get done and get right. Again, some other things here that are in the governance letter that are included. Basically, you know, no new accounting policies that were effective for this year. Your disclosures, we consider them all to be neutral and consistent. All adjustments, if any, were made. There's no uncorrected amounts in the financial statements. We have no disagreements with your management over the application of accounting principles. And we encountered no significant difficulties in dealing with the audit. Future accounting developments, I don't want to get too far in the weeds here, but the first couple ones there that are identified in yellow, I believe we talked about these last year. And what happened was that second one, the fiduciary activities, was supposed to be effective in this 20 audit. And then the lease accounting was going to be effective in 21. And the GASB, because of the COVID situation, delayed the effective dates basically 1 year. So in this 21 year, you will be taking a look at the fiduciary activities, and in 22, the lease accounting. Those are the two we have. We kind of listed them all out here, what's up and coming from the GASB. Not all of those are going to be applicable to you you all as you go through this, but those first two will be, and we'll be working with your staff to make sure that those are all understood and appropriately reflected in your financial statements. And that's the second page of that. So, again, I don't want to go into all those. That's a lot of that even bores the accountant auditors. So I'm gonna keep moving. Just a few selected 2020 financial observations from looking at the financial statements. Previously, I've been kind of talking about auditors' reports. Just briefly pivoting to the numbers a little bit, noting that your kilowatt hour sales and sales revenues were up slightly, not a lot, but slightly, and up is up, especially in a year like we just went through this past September. So that was very encouraging to see. Any commercial losses were picked up by residential gains as people were working from home and working more remotely. So that all, when it came out in the wash, it netted out to a small increase, which is good. And I know you guys know that all of your bonded indebtedness was, well, let me go back up to that first point. I failed to make one last point on that. Operating revenues, if you look at them, are a little bit down in the financial statements compared to the prior year. And you say, well, how could that be if my kilowatt hour sales were up? Well, there's a very easy and good explanation for it. Your power costs were down. And, of course, your cost of power adjustment passes those through your rates. So when the costs go down, you bill less because you have less costs to recover. And that was a good thing. So FMPA has been pretty consistent in delivering y'all some pretty good rates with low natural gas prices. Have been pretty consistent for the past several years. We just hope that will continue going forward at this point. There's some risk to that as we look ahead, but it's been very good for y'all for quite a while, and they just continue to be inching down up until this point. And, of course, second item there, all of your bonded indebtedness was paid off previously, so that leaves you virtually debt-free, you know, not counting that commercial paper. Of course, that really does, you know, that's debt that's got to be paid off, but we're down to $38 million of that, which is really the only long-term debt that the authority has whatsoever. And you look at a utility this size that is working itself very quickly towards becoming debt-free, it's kind of unheard of. So that's a tribute to a lot of people over a lot of times getting that done. And think about what that does for your rates to the members. You know, those fixed costs, those debt payments, they have to come from rates, from the rate payers. So as you eliminate that debt, that gives you the latitude to keep those rates low. And, of course, this body has been very consistent with the lower one-third of your rates fitting into the lower one-third. And that's what, you know, you look at those FMPA rates being fairly low and coming down, and the fact that you are getting pretty close to debt-free, those are the things that that help you do those things. So those are very significant items. Your net position of the electric fund increased by $7.5 million, which is very strong. And your net position of the pension plan increased by $12 million due to strong investment performance in the markets. And so far, that's continuing into this year as we sit here on February 3rd, 4 months into the new year. So hopefully that will continue. And, you know, as your pension trust fund grows and becomes stronger, we always look at the funding ratio, which is essentially the total pension obligation divided by the net position of the plan. And that's 87% improved from the prior year, 81. 87% funded in a pension plan like yours is pretty darn strong, so that's very good as well. So, what makes for a good audit? I think the tone at the top from this governing board has been very good. We know that y'all are very control conscious with your management, and you look at the numbers and you hold people accountable. your management. We get great cooperation from everybody throughout the organization, and we do go to virtually all of your various departments because it all is part of the mix. So we would like to acknowledge your management and the three parties up there, including us, working together, we think makes for a pretty darn good audit. And I will conclude my presentation and take any comments or questions that y'all might have.
Good presentation. We're happy with the report. No questions.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Going to old business.
Madam Chair, we've got one piece of old business under I. It's the recommendation to approve an amendment 4 to an existing contract with Pinnacle Solutions. As y'all know, we utilize contractual services to support some of our revenue billing functions. The existing contract is set to expire next month, and Susan Postens, our Vice President of Customer Service, is here to tell us how we are recommending to move forward.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Susan.
Okay. As you saw in your packet, here's the history. We did award a contract to Pinnacle Data Systems in March of 2017. There have been three amendments to that contract so far. The first one clarified the handling of the escrow account for postage. It had no financial impact at all. The second one increased the statement price by 0.004. That was due to an increase in paper, the cost of paper. And number three extended the contract through March 8th, 2021, as Brian said. And this one would be a final extension according to the contract through March 8th, 2022. So just so you have an idea of what we did when we start working with these organizations is first you have to design the bill. This particular one we liked because it had dynamic messaging where we could change the ads on the front and on the back, and we can have different ads for different customers and so on and so forth. All of this effort is incredibly complex, and it requires a lot of time and effort on IT's part mainly, but along with a lot of input from our customers and what they like to see, and it has to be easy to read. So we do print about or prepare about 82,000 bills a month. You can see the services that they provide, and you can see our customer satisfaction ratings for the ease of understanding our bill are very, very high. Here's kind of the evolution of our bill, and I brought a little show and tell. This is the postcard that you see in the upper left. This is what we used to send to customers many, many years ago. There you go. Be careful with it. That's an antique. Just below that is the bill that we were sending prior to Pinnacle, and then the two other ones are the current bill. The graphics are where we have the ability to change the messaging for our customers each and every month. So you can see how it's progressed, and you can see how friendly it is to read right now. So our recommendation is to approve the Fourth Amendment to Contract Agreement RFP 17-002-CV, extending the term of the agreement to continue through March 8, 2022, and authorize the President and General Manager to execute the necessary contract documents.
Very good. Do we have a motion to approve this?
So moved.
Second. Do I have a second?
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No one opposed. Motion approved.
I noticed the address on that was 8 Broadway. That was the pink.
Pardon me?
Pink K-Way building.
The original building.
Yes. This is the only one I was able to find, so we're like treasuring it.
Frame it.
Yes, we should, except then you can't see the other side.
Laminate it.
That's true.
Okay, so motion was approved. We go on to the next item.
Yeah, there's no new business. We do have staff reports, and this month's staff report is from customer service.
How convenient. Okay, first I thought I would update you on strategic goals that we're involved in. Now, a lot of these goals involve multiple departments, but this particular one, the first one is integrate automated customer service notices in Spanish by text and email. Due date by the end of June. We've been partnering with IT. The outage notifications are sent in English with the Spanish link, and that began, as you can see, in November. In January, we started out sending text messages with notices for payment arrangements that are due and balances that are due when interruption is coming. And it's been well received. Jeff keeps asking me to give him numbers on how many, and I can't. But we have had customers, especially those that did arrangements, that we sent a message that reminded them about their arrangements. They do call in and they either extend or change the arrangement or pay and make a new arrangement. So it's another form of communication with our customers, and it's very proactive and been received very, very well. I'm going to do what Mark did. Okay. The second one is provide an option to receive or view customer bills in Spanish. So this is in process. We have translated all of the text that's on our current bill. We're working with our current bill print vendor. And since this is the last year, you just approved us extending it one more year, we will be doing an RFP, and we will be sure to include the potential for multiple languages of bills in that RFP as we proceed as well. But we are looking at it. In the meantime, we're looking at everything that we can translate that might help our customers. And in this particular category, the bill, we have a how to read your bill on our KUA.com, and we are working on getting that translated so that it's easy for customers to go have access to that in Spanish. Another goal that we participate in is the customer satisfaction survey, and the design and timing is being finalized, and we actually have a meeting with them tomorrow, so we'll find out more about that. Completing AMI deployment, we are 92% deployed now, so we will be achieving this target.
I like the little fish.
Did you like the fish? This particular goal here, this photo I just had to add, we found a motorcycle being recharged at one of our fast chargers in the territory, so I thought you would like that. This goal is to complete a level 3 electric vehicle fast charger pilot with the development of a charging hub. So we are working on the language of an agreement with a customer. And also, we did go ahead and apply for some money from the VW settlement. We don't meet all of their desires, but it's a point system, so we know we'll lose points because we don't have access to the locations they want, but we're pretty close. So we went ahead and tried anyway. We should know in a couple of months whether or not we're going to get some money from that. This particular goal, refine the billing schedule to minimize fluctuations in the number of days. We have designed it, and when we get completely deployed, we will be able to implement that. What that means is our customers will not be receiving bills for more than 31 days in one bill, which is great. We do everything we can to avoid that, but with holidays and weather, sometimes in the history of creating these bills, we weren't always able to do that. Let's talk a little bit about AMI. So this is exciting. You can see the orders that are taken care of through AMI are in blue, and in orange are the ones that we have to roll a truck. Blue is going up, orange is going down. That means the system's working. And our average service order processing time when we send the order to the system is 61 seconds. So as soon as we send the order for the service to be turned on, it takes 61 seconds to get it on. Through our AMI system, we are able to look at some in-depth information about what's going on with the meter to really determine when tampering occurred. so that we found that to be very beneficial. We have repaired some meter bases, 63 total out of all the ones that we've replaced, and so it's $31,601, which is well below what we expected to pay. We are entering a lot of our territory that is older now, so we are expecting more of those repairs in this last phase of installation.
And are you doing repairs or replacements?
These are the meter base. We are doing repairs. We have, I'm not sure, I can't tell you for sure that we have not ever replaced one. But if it was fine before we got there and we pulled the meter to replace it and upgrade to AMI, we're going to fix it and restore service to that customer. New processes, we're continuing to find out how to use the system and creating new processes. And we are establishing new reports. There's a lot of data out there that we can use throughout the company, including our net metering customers. Not only can we tell that they put electricity back on the grid, but we can tell when. Was it during our peak? Was it at night? You know, and that's always good information for us to have. And then my meter, you know, it's the customer portal, so there's a little information about how much use it's getting. But we have a new feature, and that's our start-stop transfer. And the customer can go on there and do this remotely or electronically. What's really wonderful about this is when they go in through KUA.com, if they choose Spanish, all of these forms are in Spanish or whatever language they want. This is the summary report that the customer gets that shows that, you know, this is everything that you're signing up for. Make sure you've got the right address that you're turning on service. And then on the right, you can see what our customer service reps see. So they see a list of all the orders that need to be worked, and they work through them one by one. And so far, we've done 2,793 since October 1st through this particular format. So here you can see some of the traffic. I know you remember we closed the office the end of the day on March 20th. We reopened June 8th, so that this is the data since then. Our call volume is down 6%. Our chats are up 25%. Our lobby visits are down 54%, and our cashier transactions are down 59%. This was some interesting information from billing and collections, so you can see how many bills we print. You can see the disconnect notices that we generate, how many end up being marked for disconnect, and then how many are actually disconnected. And the good news here is we're down at actually disconnecting 1.55%. Pre-pandemic, it was usually just shy of 2%, so we're almost back in the normal range of where we were before. This is to show you that we are still pursuing collecting money after final bills. Customer leaves and they receive a final bill. If they don't pay it, they receive a final letter, which is that orange line. And so we've got 23% of our customers that leave that don't pay, and we have to send them a letter. And then we start pursuing payment any way we can. We try to call them, reach out to them, encourage them to pay because it's the right thing to do. That brings it down. We mark it for write-off, but the amount that we actually send to the collection agency is down to 5%. So 77% of those customers that we pursue after we send that letter, we're able to collect, which is phenomenal because anything that goes to the collection agency, we have to pay commission on, and it's 21%. They do, yes. Yes, they do not have a KUA account anymore. But if they come back,
you get them.
Yes. And that's one of the things that we'll be talking about in the slide. So we know that it's been tough, and I'm sorry that the slide is so busy. Mark mentioned how we've been working really hard to try to help our customers find assistance. What you can see right here is that we helped them, and they found over $1 million in assistance since the pandemic. So first of all, we do our payment arrangements, which we've always done, but this is a very high volume, as you can see, the amount of payment arrangements. Most of them are paid on time and in full, and that's about 76% of them. Currently, we have 3,232 payment arrangements active for $778,000. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of work that we're doing with our customers to help them. We made 588 payment arrangements in the last 2 days. Now, we look at the arrears, so anything that's 28 days and older that people owe us that have not been paid. Since the pandemic, that peaked in May with $1.7 million, and as of now, it's down to $529,000. So we've been able to help our customers, and, you know, through all of these different organizations and what they're doing, and the Good Neighbor Fund and the extra money that this board put in there to help customers, all of that added together has really made a difference. The county cares for the residential. That continues, and what I mean by continuing is that they are now sending us letters to guarantee payment for residential customers through March, and we have two customers that they've guaranteed payment for them through July. So they still have a lot of money left, and they're still committing to cover payments for customers and assist them, which is great news. Right now we have 454 accounts with that exemption, meaning that the county has guaranteed to pay. I know you've seen something like this before, but I have to brag again. You know, it's not very often, especially during a pandemic, that people will call you after their transaction with your employees and compliment them. And these are all compliments. So we had 34 customers that took the extra time after they hung up or after they were in the lobby to speak to a supervisor and compliment the employee that helped them. So some of the things, we have a new customer that said, I've never experienced customer service like this. Very professional, knowledgeable, polite, helpful, and very patient. One more reason why I want to move to your beautiful state. And one said, a little empathy goes a long way.
Can I ask you one thing? Is this asked for? Do you say, how did we do?
No. So what happens is the customer will reach out to the supervisor or whatever, and then the supervisor will fill out one of these how'd we do forms, compliment, or letting us know that the employee was complimented.
So the customer is actually taking it on themselves to initiate this.
Yes.
That's very good.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And so here's another one. They like our chat as well. So we do a survey at the end of every chat. So this one we do ask for. And these are some of the comments that they give us, and we ask them to rate us, and we're 4.69 out of 5. Talk just a second briefly about solar. So it was mentioned we do have 171 participants. 87% of those participants are at the 100% level of participation. 123 are commercial and 48 are residential. And Brian, I think there's a weed there, Brian.
That looks very familiar.
So
I've been to my house.
So what's new? I think I mentioned, or Bud may have mentioned last time, that we were working on our new service order, doing the mobile. So on the left, you can see all the different service orders that we're currently doing mobile. On the right, we've got some that we're transitioning and some that we're still talking about, and they're printed on paper right now. So as you can see, we're moving everything to the electronic mobile service orders. The map that you see shows us the green is where our employee is. The checks are completed orders. The X's are canceled orders. And the houses mean there are pending orders in that area. So this is how we can manage and we can see what's going on. The true benefit of all of this is that we have real-time data, so when our customers call us, we can tell them exactly what's going on. Yes, someone is at your house from KUA. Yes, this is what they're going to be doing, and we have all the real-time information. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Great report. Yep.
Great advancement. Thank you. Anybody else has any questions or comments? No? We're going to hear the attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good evening, Madam Chair, board members. Just a couple items. Things are starting to heat up in Tallahassee with the Florida legislature. They're in committee meetings now. The session starts in March. Unfortunately, we're hearing there's possibly going to be a serious effort by the incumbent telecommunications and cable providers to pass legislation that will mandate 5G small cell wireless attachments on municipal electric utility poles at our cost, basically. We've been fighting this battle for years. We've had federal legislation we've opposed. We have the FCC who issued an order that's in effect right now that severely limits what we can charge for the cost of having these attachments on our poles, and has other terms and conditions that require us to do things at their beck and call. Really, to put it bluntly, it's an effort to require ratepayers to subsidize shareholders, private organizations that are doing just fine. But they're very powerful, and it's probably going to be something we're talking about later, that we will have to oppose these efforts to. We don't mind. We charge a reasonable fee as it is, but we do insist and try to insist that any costs associated with attaching small cell or other pole attachments are completely recovered, that our ratepayers don't subsidize the attachers' operations. Secondly, we have the APPA virtual legislative rally coming up on March 1st and 2nd. It's definitely going to be truncated. It's not going to be like the rallies we attended. It'll be all virtual, of course. On Monday, March 1st, the big items are Vice Chair Ortega has a policymakers council meeting, and then everybody, I believe, is welcome to attend a rally, a virtual rally reception. It'll BYOB, up, bring your own drink. But it looks like it looks like it might be fun. I think they're gonna have a fun game of trivia hosted by Joy Ditto, the association president. And then Tuesday, March 2nd, will be more substantive. There will be a keynote speaker at 11 a.m. Chair Urbina is going to attend the Legislative Resolutions Committee meeting. And then that's really going to be it, except most importantly, we will be scheduling virtual meetings with our Congressman Soto and with Senator Scott and Rubio, or at least their staffs. I'll keep you posted on when those meetings take place. The two major issues we're seeing right now, there is some momentum, positive momentum, which is good, it looks like, to enable municipal governments and entities like KUA and public, local public entities in general to refund their outstanding bonds early. We used to do that. It's called advanced refunding, and Congress took that away from us a few years ago, which can be costly. FMPA likes to use this tool and has saved millions of dollars for us and for our ratepayers. So there would be a push to try to restore that. And then the other thing is we're going to see an effort for a major climate change bill. I imagine we'll start this year. The president has talked about accelerating a net zero economy from 2050 to 2035. That's pretty aggressive, especially when you consider that we have a lot of clean natural gas-fired generation that has useful lives well beyond 2035. So we'll see what happens, but those are the two big things we'll be looking at. I stand for any questions.
I have a question. Have you been in touch with Fred Hawkins and you working with him up in Tallahassee?
I have a virtual meeting scheduled with him in a few weeks. So thank you for asking, as well as Representative Barry.
Right. But I know that Fred's very interested in what's going on here. I happened to see him the other day.
Excellent. I'll keep you posted.
And
do you
have any more questions? Nope.
Thank you. Grant.
Madam Chair, there are your reminders, and I have nothing to add to that other than a wonderful month. We'll see y'all next month.
Well, if nothing else, then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.